Good evening, and I wish the Lord's blessing on each one here this evening and on our gathering together in the name of the Lord Jesus. I would like to thank you for the invitation to come here for this weekend. It's been a real blessing to my wife and I in the few days that we've been here. It brings back a lot of memories for myself here to come to this place and to come to this people. And I was just thinking, I'd like in some way to express appreciation for what you as a congregation and a community have done in the past as far as having Bible school here all those years. And I have many fond memories, and I suppose I could relate a number of them. I don't think we'll do that here this evening, but I just trust that the Lord will bless you for that. And we've felt very much a welcome here. You know, it'd be nice if you could feel a welcome in our community sometime too. So I invite you to come visit us in Oregon. It was suggested that this evening that I could speak to the youth. And I'd like to say that I enjoy youth. I enjoy seeing youth. I'm impressed with the number of young people and pre-young people, I guess you'd say, that you have here in this congregation. And my desire is that you would become firmly established. And you know, as I look about us in our own setting and other settings and so on, it seems that so many of our youth struggle with really becoming firmly established in faith and in practice. And that's my desire, that you would do that. I can't do it, but the Lord can. And so the thought or desire this evening would be that you would allow the Lord to direct you and give you what he would have for you to be. I have a text this morning this evening that you've probably heard a lot of messages on already, and it's timeless. And that would be in 1 Timothy 4:12, where we have the thought of being an example to the believer. And I'd like to just look at that for a while with you this evening. You know, youth is a time to stop and to think, what is life really all about? What am I here for? What are my goals? What are my aspirations? 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, where do I want to be? What do I want to put my energies into? And so this is a time to set aside, to focus on ideals and goals. And do you want to serve God, or do you want to serve self? What is this all about? And you know, you are going to make, or maybe already have, made choices that's going to affect the rest of your life. You are making choices that's going to affect your eternal destiny. And so this is what is so important. You know, to the world in which we live, the time of youth is just a time for careless living, a time of sowing wild oats, time of having a big fling in life, and just laugh their way to hell. But you know, this evening I have greater confidence in the youth that are here this evening, and I'm so thankful for you. So now the setting of our text, maybe I should read that. The text is 1 Timothy 4:12. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Now, this text here is not necessarily directed to the youth. Well, how should I say that? I was going to say of the Ozark Mennonite Church. It is, but it wasn't necessarily written to just young people. What it was written to was the aged Apostle Paul writing to a younger minister. This young man, Timothy, had been given charge at the Ephesian church, and he was to lead out in the affairs of the church there. And so Paul admonishes him. Timothy was a relatively young pastor, I guess bishop, actually. It's thought perhaps he was maybe 35 to 40 years old at this time. And so here was the church at Ephesus, and Paul had placed him in charge of this church. And so Paul gave him some direction and guidance that I think we can gain some benefit from. And so as a young minister, likely he felt inexperienced. He felt like, how can I fulfill the purpose that God has for me? It seems that Timothy was maybe just a little timid. Maybe he was not as forthright and outgoing as his mentor Paul was. But Paul admonishes him in the faith, and he encourages him to take up his responsibilities. Timothy, there are things to do, and you need to lead the way, and you need to be what you ought to be if you're going to lead the church at Ephesus. So I'm going to read verses 11 through 16, giving the thought of the direction that Paul wanted Timothy to have. And so he says, starting here in verse 11, "These things command and teach. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Meditate upon these things, give thyself wholly to them, that their profiting may appear to all. Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine, continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee." I'd like to think just a little bit this evening before we go any further about the word example. Paul told Timothy to be an example of the believers. And the primary root of that meaning in the Greek is to blow or to strike. It means to make an impression. It means to make a mark. And so in John 20, verse 25, we have the story of Thomas after the resurrection. And Thomas said, "Unless I see the print of the nail in his hand, I will not believe." That is the same Greek word as example. Unless I see the print of that nail. And so this word has a thought of a pattern. The form or the figure of an object, it's a print of the original. I'd like to illustrate it like this a little bit, and probably some of you brethren are a lot more acquainted with this than what I am, but there's, if I understand right, there's such a thing as a framing hammer. And on this framing hammer, there's some little raised points or whatever. And so when you take that hammer and you go like that, there's a pattern that is on that wood. And that pattern is the same every time. It's an example. It doesn't change the pattern of that head. Maybe on the sister side, and I don't know how much stamping any of you do anymore. I used to see some of that in my household, and I suppose some of you may still do that, make cards and so on. And so you have this rubber stamp. And so you take that, and there's some ink there, and you take that stamp, you have a nice picture of a cottage that you want to put on this card. And so you take that and put it on the ink, and you go like that. Oh, it's a lighthouse. I thought I had a cottage. You say ridiculous. If that has a stamp of a cottage, and you stamp a cottage, it's going to be a cottage. Young people, you are supposed to be that way. You are supposed to come out the same every time that you hit, every time that you make contact. It's the same form. It's the same thing. It's a pattern. Titus 2:7 talks about a pattern of good works. And Romans 6:17 says that ye have obeyed that form of doctrine, the same Greek word again. And so we have the thought of a form, a pattern, a print, an example. I'm going to read 2:21. It says like this: For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example, that ye should follow his steps. And so Jesus, in his life, every time that he came in contact with someone, he left the same pattern. He left the same example. And we are to be little Jesuses. And we are to have the same pattern, the same example, time after time, every time. And so that when somebody sees you and knows you and has an idea of what's coming, they know that, well, when you come, this is how you're going to live your life. The thought here of the example is literally an underwriting or to trace letters for copying. That's another definition of this word. And so Paul tells Timothy, you need to be a pattern, something that will hold true to form every time. Something that can be traced. That when that is traced, say you have an object and you trace around it on paper, it's going to come out exactly the same time as it did last time, the same as it did a month ago, and it's going to do the same thing in 6 months from now. It's going to be the same form. I'd like to ask you, young people, is your life that consistent? And all of us. Is it that consistent that what we do and what we say and how we act and the lives that we live comes out with that pattern every time, every time, every time? It doesn't change. It doesn't vary. Then I would ask this. Is it safe to follow your example? To follow the outline of your life? Can and should your life be duplicated by others? So how was Timothy going to gain the confidence and the respect of his congregation? And especially probably there were a lot of people there that were older than what he was. You know, if a young person is self-centered and proud and has a know-it-all attitude, and he's not going to be respected. He may even be despised. But you know, a young person that is open to counsel and correction, a young person that is not egotistic, not critical of others, this is the example that we would like to see. You know, sometimes I've found that there's young people that feel that they know a lot more than their elders. And I'll have to admit there's a lot of things I don't know, and I'll have to admit there's a lot of younger people that know a lot of things that I don't. But I still appreciate when there is respect and honor. And so I'd just like to encourage those of you who are younger not to lift yourself up in pride, but rather simply be a pattern of what the believer ought to be. Be thou an example of the believer. Now, I'm going to, at the end of the message, I'd like to reverse that just a little bit. I used to think that this said to be an example to the believers. That's not really what it says. I'd like to talk about being an example to the believers. But you are to be an example of what a believer should be. And so when people see and interact with you young people from Ozark, do they say, okay, that's, yeah, that is the way the Ozark Church is? You know, I'll have to admit that over the years, I've drawn some conclusions. Now, we get quite a few, particularly young men, some young women, that come to the West Coast about every summer for helping in the harvest. Some fine young people have come, and then there's been some that I've had to wonder a little bit. And I'm not talking about just them. I'm talking about just those in general that you come in contact with. And maybe I'm a little bit judgmental. But you know, I've come to some conclusions, and not really maybe the best conclusions, when I have observed some young people that I see here and there. And I don't have much doubt that what their ministers are concerned. And probably many consistent believers in their congregations. But you know, if that is really a specimen, if that's an example of the believers from that congregation, I just question a few things. Now, is that the way it is with you young people? When you go abroad, do people question what the Ozark Church is all about? I think it's a fair question. What do people see in you? Can your ministry, can your parents have confidence that when you are away from home, that you are a true example of what this church stands for? You know, young people, you can be a real witness to the grace of God in your life by the kind of life you live. And this is a time of life when you can make an impression on others as to the sincerity of your desire to serve the Lord. On the other hand, it's not too difficult. You can maybe put forth quite a, I don't know if I'd say display, but at least to make it look like you're doing what you should. And yet it's not difficult for people to see when your life is a sham. If you're parroting what the church says just to get by, when your heart has no desire to serve the Lord, your heart has no desire to conform to what your church stands for, your heart has no desire for the spiritual things of Jesus Christ, but you want the things of the flesh, you know, that's going to be evident. But you need to be that pattern that is the same day after day, year after year, a pattern of the believer. You know, a church is often known for its vitality and its effectiveness and its spirituality, not necessarily by its ministers, but by its youth. You think about that. You interact with a congregation somewhere else that you know very little about. You make a lot of observations based on the young people in that church. And so you see, if you as Christian youth are living godly lives, consistent lives, that the world knows, the world about you knows, that the group of people that you associate with are promoting truth and endeavoring to keep it. But you know, on the other hand, if youth portray life of self-centeredness, of carelessness, of worldliness, of pleasure-seeking, of disinterest in that which is spiritual, then people have a right to question. Young people, you do, and you are, and you will have a great influence upon this congregation, both now and for her future. And that would be my burden this evening, that this church here and other churches, our church at home, would go forward. You know, I'm not going to be here many more years, I don't think. And I appreciate being able to interact with it. It's such a blessing to see younger ones come on and take up the work and maybe even be stronger in their Christian life than what I've been. And so when you meet others, you should be a cookie cutter copy of the believers. You should be an example of. You should be a pattern to follow. You should be an outline to trace. Now, Paul mentions six things here in this text, and I'm going to go over these briefly. Six things that Timothy should be, in which Timothy should be an example, in which he should be that pattern. So I'd like to just look at those six things. The first we find is in word. Be thou an example of the believer in word. You know, what we have to say says so much about us. It shows our interest. It shows where our heart is. It shows the things that stir us up. And it reveals the heart within. We are told that our speech should be seasoned with salt. Jesus said in Luke 6:45, of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. And I think the thought there is the overflow. You know, sometimes we just can't help ourselves. We just talk about something because we're excited about it and it's of interest to us and we want others to know about that. It's an overflow. It's the abundance of the heart. That's what our mouth speaks. So there's a number of types of speech that we should avoid. And I'm going to look at Colossians 3. And we have here some speech that should be avoided, that we should not participate in. Colossians 3, verses 8, 9, and 10. But now ye also put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that you've put off the old man with the deeds and put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. So we're not to become angry and fly off the handle and say things that we regret later. Blasphemy. Filthy communications. Saying things that are not appropriate to say. Lie not one to another. Now, we don't lie, do we? I don't know if I should say this or not, but it's kind of bothered me over the years. When somebody tells a great big tall tale, and then they just laugh and they say, well, I wouldn't tell them the truth. Really? Really? Does that line up with Scripture? Lie not one to another. But it's all right, isn't it, if I just lead someone on and mislead them and then laugh it off. Well, you know, telling the untruth is really no joking matter. Titus 3:2 says, speak evil of no man. Now, speaking evil of no man, that would have the thought of slander. To say things about someone else that really are not kind, even if they are true. And that would then also in Proverbs 17:9, he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends. And so that would come into the realm of gossip, to talk about somebody else that really is not necessary to talk in that way. So how you talk, does it matter who hears? You know, I've already walked up to a group of people and get the impression that there's just kind of a little change of direction in what's being said. Why? Are there certain people that you would not want to hear the way you talk? Now, I realize there's some private things that we don't want other people to hear, and that's okay. You know, how we talk does affect the world that we come in contact with. In our business, there was a man we did a lot of business with, and he's no longer living. A fairly nice man. I think he was a fairly moral man, but he had a little trouble with his speech. and he would say some swear words, but he knew that in our office there, that wasn't really the way we talked. And he'd be going along, and then all of a sudden he'd say something, and he'd say, "Oh, pardon my French," and then he'd go on. Well, it wasn't French at all. Another man I think about, there was a man, this has been in the earlier days of our business there, so it's been quite a number of years ago, a man from Baltimore. And he wanted to do business with us, and he came and he sat down in our conference room, and we discussed some things. And finally, he looked at us and he said, "You know, the trouble with doing business with you folks is it limits my vocabulary 80%. Well, was that a trouble? I thought it was a good thing. But you see, it does make a difference. And I never talked to him about his language, but God did. But if I would not have been an example, if I wouldn't have been a cookie cutter copy of the believers, he probably wouldn't have thought about that. All right. "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in conversation." Well, now, haven't we already talked about conversation? Well, this word here has the thought of our way of life, how we live our lives. Our behavior, our manner of life, our walk of life. So we're not only known by how we talk, but we're known by how we walk. How we live and our manner of life shows first, we go back to this morning, in the home life. That's where the rubber really meets the road. Are you cheerful? Are you easy to get along with? Or are you grumpy? Are you irritable? Do you do your share of the work? Or do you leave that all up to dad and mom? What about the workplace, those who work for others? Are you gentle and easy to be entreated? Do you follow the direction of your supervisor, your boss, your employer? There he goes again. I mean, I know so much better than him. If he just let me do it the way I want to do, well, maybe you do. But let's be an example in our walk of life and not try to refute everything everybody else says. Do you insist on having your own way? Do you work as unto Christ? Or is your service strictly from self-motivation? Now, we talk about our walk of life. Maybe it would be all right to say a little something about our driving of life. What do people see? Now, I have no idea if there's any problem here. But you know, we have our church building in the little city of Halsey. And we have had some neighbors who have been quite unhappy with us because of the fast driving that goes on First Street. So I had, a few years back, I had a phone call. And it was from a neighbor down the street. And he looked online to see who he might call in the Halsey Mennonite Church, and he found my name. And he called me. And he really laid it out to me. He says, somebody left the highway there, and they went toward your church, and they were going, I forget what he said, 50 miles an hour past my house, which was probably hardly possible because he lived pretty close to the highway. But I think it was somebody with, you know, fairly loud mufflers and so on. Well, it was a situation where there was some, again, it was those who were there for the harvest. A number of them had gone to the gymnasium for volleyball on Saturday evening. So now what do I do? So we went there to the school. And when there was a break in the game, I said, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you." And I told him what this neighbor had to say. Well, there was a fellow that he wasn't from our church. He was from our community, but not from our church. And he was pretty apologetic. And he said, that was me. He said, next time I'll go around the other way. Well, next time you better slow down. But I'm just saying this to let you know that people notice. Our conversation, our walk of life. Are you a example? Are you a pattern that can be followed safely? What about your appearance? Your walk of life and your appearance. I'd like to read several verses along this line as well. First of all, Ephesians 4, 22 to 24. That ye put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. And so we have an old man, or at least we did have an old man, and that old man tries to rear its head too often. And that old man is corrupt because it's lustful and it's deceitful. But you need to be renewed in your mind and put on the new man, which is created, made new in righteousness and true holiness. Also, in 2 Peter 3:11, it talks about holy conversation. And here again, this is the walk of life. 2 Peter 3:11. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness? And so is your walk of life consistent enough that others know? They know what to expect, or is it erratic? You go this way that time, this way the other time, then straight forward, then maybe put it in reverse. But is your walk of life consistent? Be an example of the believer in charity. Now, surely you young people don't have any trouble loving each other. You know, you're forgiving, I hope, or are you? Do you show love to all? Do you show love to the young and the old? Do you show love to the popular and the unpopular? As long as you're a part of my in-group, you're fine. But if you're not, why, you can just go off somewhere else. You know, love includes others in my circle of friends, even though they may not be my type. If there are others that always feel left out, I'm afraid there's a lack of charity. Be an example in charity. In John 15, verse 12, this is my commandment, this is Jesus speaking, this is my commandment that ye love one another as I have loved you. Now, you know, that's a tall order, to love each other as much as Jesus has loved us. It's a high standard. Romans 12:9 says, let love be without dissimulation. That word dissimulation has a thought of pretense. And so somebody comes along that you just as soon not talk to. Oh, it's so nice to see you. I'm glad you came. Really? Really? You really love that person? Let love be without pretense. I've wondered already if we as parents kind of feed that mentality. Now you be nice to them. Okay. But you should love them. You should love them. All right. Be an example in spirit. I think that that spirit puts life into our religion. You're not doing what you are doing just because you have to. It's not a drudgery. It's not something that you just wish you didn't have to do. But because you have a desire for spiritual things, that you're an example in spirit, to be spirit-led. You know, when we come to Christ for cleansing from sin, our spiritual life is just like Adam was before God breathed into him, into his nostrils, a breath of life, and he became a living soul. So I would get the picture of Adam laying there, a clump of dirt put together, no breath there at all. And God breathed into his nostrils a breath of life. And so it is, as we in our spiritual life, we are the old man, just like Adam laying there. We were dead in trespasses and sins, and made new through our Lord Jesus Christ. And so when God breathes life into us, we become a living spirit that communes with his spirit. And so to me, the idea of spirit has a thought of zeal. You know, sometimes we use the word spirited. But I think it has a thought of zeal. And you know, it's a challenge to me when I see young people that are zealous for the work of the Lord. They want to do the work of the Lord. They want to be involved in that and in the work of the church and put their whole being into it. I think of that song sometimes that we sing, "Give of your best to the Master. Give of the strength of your youth. Pour your soul's fresh glowing ardor into the battle for truth." Not sure if I got all those words right. Romans 12:11 says to be fervent in spirit. Another translation for that verse says, "Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord." I'd like to ask you this evening, how many halfway Christians do we have here? Yeah, you want to be a part of the church. You want to be known as a decent person, but you know, not really wholehearted. Let's have spirit. Be an example of the believer in spirit. We're going forward with the Lord. We're going to do things. We have zeal. We want to be a part of the program. Be an example of the believer in faith. Now, faith has a thought of a firm persuasion, and it's a belief that does not require evidence from personal experience. Now, the Bible definition is, now faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Now, I thought about this on Friday. Elsie and I flew from Eugene to Springfield. And we got on the, probably not the first plane, but on the one, and we never saw the pilot. And yet, I could tell that there was a pilot there. There was evidence there. And I think that's the way it is with God. You know, there's so many evidences that God is there, even though we cannot visually see him. And so youth is a time where we question and we wonder and we challenge. But faith will root and ground you. Are you an example of faith? I believe. I believe in God. Again, I think of the words of a song. I believe in a God, even though I can't see him. Yet I know he's there. Can it be said of you, as it was said to the Romans, in Romans 1:8, where it says, "First of all, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world." Do people notice the faith that you have? And it's a point of interest, a point of conversation. And then there's one more. Be an example in purity. And we talked yesterday to the fathers and to the young men quite a bit in matters of purity. Mentioned a little bit of that this morning. Do you mean that as a young person, with all the energy I've got and all the possibilities of things I could do, that I'm supposed to be a pattern. I'm supposed to be an example. I'm supposed to be the same every time. You know, we live in a day when chastity is winked at. It's old-fashioned. But you know, here's an opportunity for Christian young people to really be a witness to the world about us. It seems that the man of the world just really can hardly believe that our young people can keep themselves free from immoral involvement. I'd like to suggest several areas of purity, and one thing that I want to note is that purity is more than just being free from immorality. The first one that I have is to be pure in heart. Your desires to God, that's part of purity. A desire to do God's will. In Psalm 24, verses 3 and 4, it says, "Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully." You know, I believe when the Lord looks at our heart, our motives, our desires, and sees that it is directed toward him, it is pleasing in his sight. I think we need to have purity of heart before we can live a life of purity. Then I think about the being pure in thoughts. Do we allow ourselves the privilege of thoughts that take us down? You know, if one thinks wrong thoughts and secretly desires the forbidden, you will have opportunity to put those thoughts into action. And that's where we can fall down and be far from what the Lord wants us to be. And so if you allow your thoughts to dwell on the impure, then there's no strength, there's no resolve, there's no resistance when temptation comes. And I'd just like to say here, I think we need to be so careful in our reading material, because that can corrupt the thought life. We need to be pure in our vision, in the things that we look at, the things that we see. What do you allow your eyes to look upon? Well, maybe you say you can't help what you see. And it's like I told the men yesterday. It's not so much what we see if we turn our eyes away, but it's maybe looking the second time or just focusing on that. Psalms 101, verse 3. "I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes." And then I think of Job. I appreciate Job here in Job 31, verse 1. He says, "I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think on a maid?" So he says he made a covenant. He wasn't going to look at a woman in a wrong way. Another translation puts it this way, not to look lustfully after a girl. Why should I then think upon a maid, not to look lustfully? And so our society is saturated with pornography. There's pinups. Find that sometimes in places of business. There's internet. And how can we fill our minds with erotic accounts and yet grow more and more like Jesus? Then there's purity in speech, and I've already talked a little bit about that. Don't think I'll go into that too much more. But vulgar and suggestive talk should be out. And then there's purity in conduct. And the way that we live and conduct ourselves, especially around those of the opposite sex, it shows our commitment to God or whether we're not serious in our Christian life. And you know, the senses, Our bodily senses are strong in youth, and so they need to be brought under the control of the headship of Jesus Christ. And so every physical urge that we have, or instinct, when it is used correctly, rightly, according to what God intended, it's fulfilling. But if it's misused, it brings misery and estrangement for God. All right, I think I'm going to move on then. 1 Timothy 5:22 says, to keep thyself pure. So we've talked about these different things. Be thou an example of the believer in word, in conversation, in faith, in purity. Let's see, I've kind of lost my track there. Let me go back to that. In word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. So now I said at the beginning there, I'd like to say just a little bit about being an example to. Not only are you to be an example of the believers, but I think that you should be an example to others who need a good example. And I'm going to say particularly to younger children. Probably many of you have younger siblings in the home. Maybe you have nephews and nieces. Maybe it's just other children in the church setting here. You know what? They watch you. I've just observed that. How the little tykes, they almost idolize the older, the youth or older intermediates and so on. They look up to you. They idolize you. So I'd just like to ask you again, can that little chap that you have interaction with, can he take a pencil in his little stubby fingers and make an outline of your life and take it off and it comes out right? Can he do that? Or are there going to be jagged edges? Are there going to be things that are missing, things that are not the way they ought to be? Can he safely follow your path? I think you need to be an example to your peers. You know, you can do a lot to encourage your friends to do that which is right. Or you can be a source of leading them in the wrong direction. I have a book at home, and it's been a while since I've looked at it. Let's see if I can remember how this goes. But there was a group of doctors that wanted to just test and see what peer pressure does. And so they took a group of adolescents or young people and said, all right, now we're going to have on the board, there's three lines. There's a short line, a medium line, and a long line. We're going to have somebody that doesn't know what's going on here. We're going to tell them, you come in, and whenever I point to the long line, raise your hand. Okay. So let's say there were 9 people that knew what was going on and 1 that didn't. And so they get there, and the one that's doing this says, all right, now I want you to, whenever I point to the longest line, raise your hand. So he would go and he would point to the next longest line. And all the hands would go up. This one fellow was kind of bewildered. Oh, his hand would go up too. He had to go along with the crowd. No, now I want it when I point to the longest line. So then he points to the shortest line. And again, all these 9 hands go up. And this other fellow, I mean, he can't go against the crowd. I mean, they're all saying something different than what he's thinking, but so he goes along with it. That's peer pressure. Then they said that they found that if there were 2 that didn't know what was going on, they were much more likely not to vote with the crowd than if it was just 1. And I think that illustrates something that It's just human nature. We don't want to be different. We don't want to say, you know, the rest of you are wrong. This is really what's right. But they wouldn't do that. And so we can be an example to our peers. Now, maybe this is a little bit of a hard one for you to understand, but I think you need to be an example to the old people, to the older ones. You've always depended on the older ones to lead out. You look to your parents, you look to your ministers, you look to older brethren to be what they ought to be. But you know what? There's inconsistencies. We fail sometimes. And so rather than being critical, which that happens, because you're idealistic, you know what's right, and you have a vision for what the people of God should be, and then you are disappointed with the inconsistency that you see in maybe your parents or in older people or whatever it might be. And you say, you know, if they claim to be what they ought to be and they can still do that, I'm done. I can't go along with this. No. Be an example to them. You know, there's been many times where I have really been challenged by a stand that someone younger than me has taken. They point out to me, you know, here's an area that probably needs to be strengthened a little bit. I appreciate that. You know, let me just explain a little bit. Maybe you look at older ones and feel that they have had all of life's battles and they've won these battles and they're there now and all they need to do is just coast on into glory. Doesn't work that way. As one becomes older, there are added duties and responsibilities. The load gets heavier. The way gets more complex. There are more and greater decisions to make. And I know particularly in middle age can get bogged down with just the responsibilities of life. But you know, in youth, you have high ideals. Live them. Don't discard them just because of the failure of someone else. Be an example even to older brethren. We need that. I've been challenged, I've been happy at times when one of my children will come and say, "Dad, don't you think it would be better if?" Not really challenging me, but challenging me, if you want to know what I'm saying. Not saying that you're just clear off, but wouldn't there be a better way? I like that. I think that's good. Another group of people that you can be an example to is to the seeking. You know, there's so many lost souls in the world, in our communities, in our relatives, those that we come in contact with. And even now, you may come in contact with somebody that is counting the cost. Is it really worth it to be a Christian, to be a child of God? Is a Christian life worthwhile? But you know, if they see a happy, Christian, young brother or young sister, and see you happy serving the Lord, that may be just the thing that helps them to decide, yes, I want to be a Christian as well. But you know, if you're unconcerned, if you're careless, it may turn them away. So I'd just like to ask you here in conclusion this evening, what kind of an example are you? Are you an example that is willing to do what is right regardless of what others do? You know, an example is a leader in right living. An example is consistent, does not change from day to day. An example is an impression that does not change. Every time it hits, it's the same. Every time. It's a pattern that can be traced by others. And I'd like to close with a couple verses from 2 Corinthians 3. 2 Corinthians 3, verses 2 and 3. Ye are our epistle, written in our hearts, known and read of all men. For as much as ye are manifestly declared to be the epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not in tables of the stone, but in fleshy tables of the heart. Here it talks about being an epistle. And we know that the epistles are those that were written by the apostles for encouragement, for Christian living. But you can be a present-day epistle. And so, young people, I would just like to encourage you again this evening to be that example. May the Lord bless you.